Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me, my co-host, is Marvin Smith. Marvin, it's great to be back in the studio with you.
Alan, it's always great to be in the studio. It's not all the time I get a chance, the opportunity to see you. We talk, we communicate all the time, but, you know, your schedule, my schedule, and when you're out there trying to do the good works, make this place, make this world a better place for all, Boy, does it keep you busy.
You too.
You know, I was talking to someone yesterday, and I said, we were talking about time and proximity. I said, I don't know if I'm getting older, and I'm looking at mortality now. So I'm seeing things different, which I think is great for our show today when we start talking about developmental growth.
Absolutely.
Well, Alan, guess what?
What?
Each week, we will bring you guests that will inspire, educate, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing you answers and options to raising children today in a constantly changing future.
And each week, we will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
Alan, do the math. With each of us having over 30 years of experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields, and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family and mine, and all our listeners, mentally, physically, and spiritually sound.
And make this world a better place for all of us. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family.
Answers for the Family.
You got it. Now, our topic today is an upward spiral, a developmental approach to parenting your teen. Our guest today, Rick Johnson, is a clinical social worker with over 30 years experience working with teens and their parents.
You know, he has a master's in social work from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and a bachelor's in psychology and philosophy from Trinity College.
And Rick is a child and adolescent therapist and has been the chief administrator for a number of psychiatric hospitals and residential-based treatment programs.
But here it is. As we've always talked about, we will bring you some very informative, exciting guests, authors, and Rick is an author.
Absolutely.
He has a book, An Upward Spiral, A Developmental Approach to Parenting Your Teen.
That's right. And most recently, Rick and his wife, Jan, co-founded Summit Preparatory Academy, a therapeutic boarding school for teens in Kalispell, Montana. Rick, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much, Alan and Marvin. I really appreciate this opportunity to be on your show and to be a part of the good work you do.
Well, we appreciate having you, and a special thank you that goes out to Barb for getting a hold of Jan and setting this up, because we've wanted to have you on the show for some time now.
No, thank you so much.
Hey, I love the title of the book, An Upward Spiral. I love it. I mean, you know, because so a lot of times in society, Rick, you know, we're always talking about the downward spiral. And as long as I have worked with teens and Alan, you know, we always, and parents, we hear this quite a bit. My teen is just spiraled out of control. And when you think of spiral, it's not up, it's down. I tell you what, Rick, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work with teens?
Sure. You know, I'm actually originally from Chicago, got both my undergraduate and a graduate degrees there, and started off as an adolescent therapist, and actually did an awful lot of crisis work on the west side of Chicago.
Okay.
And then ended up running a number of psychiatric hospitals, and actually started several programs, and started a hospital from scratch as well. And I really enjoyed that work, because it's, you know, it's very valuable work. But I actually found that given how short term it was, you tended to only focus on pathology.
Right.
And of course, it's very important. If an adolescent is struggling with anxiety or depression, you really need to address our learning issues, whatever they are. But we never seem to have time to get around to how do we help that teen get back on track in life more globally. From a developmental perspective, how do we help them get back on track in life? So for about the last 15 years, I've had the opportunity to really focus on that. That's one of the things that we do, certainly at Summit Preparatory School. We have a child and adolescent psychiatrist who's wonderful, and we certainly address psychiatric issues, learning issues, and those things. But the core of what we do is really focused on how do you help a child get back on track in life, back on track from a developmental perspective. So in writing the book, it's that same developmental perspective that I wanted to share with parents. Because we were all adolescents, we all went through this. So I wanted that. Parents to really have that developmental perspective and really understanding what their teen struggles are, you know, and why they're having them.
Right. Well, you know, Rick, why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about, you know, the history of kind of how this came about? Because I think that, you know, for those of us that have been around a few semesters, you know, there was a time in which people could have a longer stay, you know, in a psychiatric facility. So, but be it HMOs or whatever, you know, funding, exactly. You know, things have evolved into a point, as you said earlier, to where that really is something that's very, very short term. And
it is.
And what does a parent do after that? And that's why I think it's so great that, you know, yourself and many others have gone out and said, how are we going to take this to the next step? But if you could kind of, for those a few semesters younger than us, share a little bit of how we got to that point.
And you know, and Rick, and as you go into that, you know, as I can recall sharing what Alan was, what he's talking about, I think back years and then going forward, looking at how the industry has changed. I mean, there was a time when we would address the issue, but we never would go. I use this term, the iceberg syndrome. You know, 10% of what we see is what we address. And to me,
right,
I think therapeutically, that's the way it was because you had a lot of time. And now it's like we got to get to those drivers, which is 90% of what's beneath the surface, which I really believe, you know, what your book is topic, you know, the upward spiral is addressing.
Correct. You know, and you know, back when I actually started, and I have to admit it was back in the mid-80s, at that point, adolescent work was people understood that time was part of the equation in really working with teens because, you know, it really takes forming the kind of relationship, the kinds of trusting relationships with teens, where they allow you to be a part of their life and actually, you know, allow you to help them move forward in development. When I started, residential treatment, typically was at least 9 months. And if an adolescent was hospitalized, you know, it could be for as long as 3 to 6 weeks, and there was always very careful work put into what's the next step to keep them moving. When the health insurance and shift into managed care happened in the late 80s, suddenly that switched. To the point where an inpatient stay might now be, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, and residential treatment, you know, tends to be about 2 to 3 months.
2 to 3 months.
So it
right.
really places the onus on local community services and on alternative residential services similar to ours, and certainly, you know, it also reinforces the importance of parents and in the part they play in really helping teen, you know, helping their own teen get back on track in life, which again, from my perspective, is why having a developmental understanding of truly what is happening with your teen and how you can use that knowledge to help promote your teen's growth, you know, is really what excites me. You know, and it's, again, it's, you know, it's really what I've been sharing with parents as part of parent workshops for a number of years, and was the impetus to want to put this into, you know, hopefully a very readable book, you know, one that's, right, that, right, that's not overly technical.
Right. Well, the other part that I look at, too, is that from when I look at the shift, or as I look at the evolution of time and things changing in the industry, it's back to a point, unfortunately, fortunately, where more responsibility is going back to the parent again. And, it becomes very difficult because, you know, as we have evolved as a society, good or bad, it got to the point where a lot of the attention and resources with parents were, you know, because all of a sudden you had a household of two working adults or single household parents, and they're trying to now utilize the resources in the community or within the system to help them basically raise their kids. And when they start becoming out of control, it made a difference.
Well, yeah, and I look at it as kind of a pendulum effect. And,
yes.
And Rick, would you say that also, that the pendulum has sort of swung a little bit too far, you know, as far as getting away from the parents' involvement? And do you see it now starting to come back a little bit?
I do, although, you know, it's a real challenge for parents. I mean, you know, kids have more in their life now. And, of course, you know, I don't want to sort of talk about the good old days when I grew up. But I can't help but do that some, because kids have so much in their life, so many more influences. They can be online, they can be texting, and in fact, they actually sleep with their cell phones, so they can be in touch. I mean, you know, they have so much more stimulus and so much more environmental static in their life than we ever had, and it makes it much harder for parents to have an influence, because there's just so many other influences in their life. So I do think, certainly, you know, we are coming back and recognizing, as we always should have, the great importance of parents. We're also at a time when it's much more difficult for parents to have the kind of influence that they would really like to have with their child.
Well, you know, and the other part of that too, Rick, is the, when I think about, just call it for what it is, technology was supposed to make life easier. In actuality, we're starting to see now the ill effects of overly being stimulated by the technology. And I think, as you were sharing earlier, about parenting, it's the relationship. And so if you're competing as a parent with all these external entities, it becomes very difficult for a parent. And then it all depends on what type of temperament the parent has, what type of control they have with that child. So it's tough. I mean, it really is tough parenting. So, you know, all the advice, and that's what we like about your book. I mean, anything that can help give parents an edge of regaining, you know, that, not, I don't want to say control, but regaining that relationship with your child to help form and develop them, makes a difference in the world.
It does, you know, and what we talk to parents about is how important it is to balance equally both relationships and structure, and you know, this can be really hard when you have a teen, you know, who's perhaps involved in some scary behaviors, or is sort of shutting down or whatever. It can be very easy to focus on limits and consequences and structure, which of course you have to do, but then tend to forget you have to equally balance that with focusing upon relationships and really, you know, how do you reinforce your relationship with your child? Are there other adult mentors in your child's life? You know, if there isn't too many other adult mentors, you know, can you reach out to a good therapist who really, you know, who's able to form that kind of positive relationship You know, because it's really those types of very important healthy relationships that promote healthy development, that promote healthy psychological and social development. So relationship is paramount. But as having had two teens myself, I can tell you when you're in the midst of a crisis due to the behavior of your teen, it's hard to remain calm, and it's hard to focus on that relationship, but it's obviously very important.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, Rick, I got to say this. As a parent of six, at the end of the day, somebody, by default, I win. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, when we start to have those debates, by default, I'm the patriarch of my household. It's my way. It's not even the highway. This is how we're going to do it. but that still was from developing, working with your kids, having that closeness that they can go to their room, and then later we can honestly talk about the situation.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, kids have a very hard time accepting structure in the absence of a relationship, whatever that structure is. Where, you know, they can be much more willing to accept structure, you know, and actually do things that they may not even see any value in for the sake of important relationships. And I actually think of an academic example that I think many parents have had when their child starts to do better in a certain class.
Uh-huh.
And you sit them down and you say, gosh, geometry must be your subject. You must really love it. You know, look at your grades. You're doing much, much better. And your child looks at you with this blank look on his face and says, no, geometry, I can't even imagine what I'll ever use it for, but I like the teacher.
Right.
Right.
And that tells you the importance of relationships and how that's what helps promote development. And that's what allows a teen to start to try on healthy structure, for example, is through these important relationships.
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a great point, you know, from the standpoint of the relationship with the teacher. And I think just as Marvin said earlier when he talked about being the patriarch, I think the reason that that works for him is because he established the right kind of relationship early on, so that when it
Absolutely.
Came time for him to take that stand, they respected it and they were able to all move forward from it. I think one of the issues, though, becomes the parent that didn't establish that early on, that now is trying to pick up the mantle at age 15 and decide, well, I guess it's about time that I do this. And by then, let me ask you, by then, is it too late, or what do they need to do at that point to still make this work?
You know, I don't think it's ever too late, you know, I mean, you know, because we've certainly seen families that when we first started working with them were, you know, not just miles apart, but galaxies apart. Sure. And actually seen how, when you're really open and show your kid how much you care about them, you can actually make up a lot of lost ground. But it actually takes a lot of patience. When you're in a situation like that, your teen tends to test you, tends to really see, well, do you really mean it? Are you really going to be there for me when I'm at my worst? Can be even more rebellious at times. So they're really testing you to actually see, do you really care about me? Are you going to stick with it? And so, you know, I think that in sort of repairing perhaps the lack of the kind of relationship that we're talking about, it can be a tough road, you know, because teens do tend to then test that relationship, you know, and that's when it's really helpful to have support. I'm a strong believer in a good family therapist. I also, you know, I love parent support groups. I think there's times when only another parent of a teen can understand what it's like. Unless you're in the midst of it, it's really hard to grasp how much work it is to focus on that relationship when the behavior they're demonstrating can at times drive you up the wall.
Well, you know, I think too, though, I believe as well, Rick, that, you know, in a situation when you start to look at relationships and they're galaxy apart, it really takes a mediator, intervention, a third party, someone who is very understanding on both sides that can actually bring those two opposing polars, the opposing parts back to some middle ground. And you know, you're right, it's a lot of work, but it can definitely be done. I've seen it.
It can definitely be done.
And I want to go back to what Alan said a little earlier about, you know, as he pointed to me how I established that. Just real simple. You know, formerly playing in the NFL and was a linebacker, I told my kids, act up and I'll tackle you. Just keep it up. Just don't try me. Now that I'm getting older, they're going, really, Dad? Really?
But they could take that because metaphorically you were a coach, not just sort of you know, someone standing on the sidelines giving them orders.
That's true. That is
true. You were involved in their life.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what makes such a difference.
Well, you know, here's another scenario. I'll use a life scenario. I have a young man that I've been mentoring. He was part of I founded a charter school, a middle school. So I had a young kid that's basically a good kid, good, you know, family background. There was some dysfunction, some indifferences at home. His father was in the household, but his father wasn't really engaged. Mother and father trying to keep him involved. And I guess the young man at some point was, you know, he was a big kid for his age, too, in eighth grade. So the mother basically brought him to our school and said, Mr. Marvin, can you take care of this boy? I said, are you giving him to me? She says, yes, I'm giving him to you. So I can do what I need to do? She said, he's yours. Long story short, he did well. So here recently, now he's a senior, and the kid is 6'5", 320 pounds, and he is being taunted or sought after by, you know, I call it big time university. And I am promoted, I have been promoting to him USC Trojans because of now experience, history, what I know. And if you have any remote, every kid who gets at this level wants to be a pro, wants to be a professional. And if they say they don't, they're lying. I mean, that's reality. You know, we all dream this.
Yep.
So he would like to go pro someday. And I'm saying, well, let's, you know, so what I'm trying to do is be very logical and give this young man insight in comparison to schools that he's looking at. And for some reason, SC is the place for him. He could actually start as a freshman. There's a lot of great upside to get a degree from SC. You know, on that parchment means the networking you have with that, life after sports, because he's going to be in the business world much longer than he's going to be an athlete. There's no guarantee he wouldn't get to the pros. But when you start to take all this together and you present it, and he still doesn't get it, you know, I just go, what the heck? You know, I'm like, everything is in front of him. And I said, well, you know, some they have to go through the process. Some can learn from others. And, you know, for whatever reasons, you know, maybe if I would have been in his life a little earlier, maybe I would have had more influence. But at the end of the day, from my own experience, man, go Trojans. But, you know, wherever he goes, I think it will end up being okay for him.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things.
I actually think part of that struggle at times in getting through, if you sort of again understand developmentally of what's going on with a teen, just has to do with teen brain development.
Yes.
And we actually used to think that the brain was done developing before adolescence, and we now know that just isn't the case. And in fact, the frontal frontal lobes,
yes.
Of the cortex is the last to fully develop. So you have a teen who has a fully developed limbic system, which is really the emotional brain,
right.
Which is supercharged by hormones and all these other things, and there can be changes in neurotransmitters. So you could be trying to have this wonderful logical conversation with a teen, and they interpret everything you say from their emotional brain.
Right.
And it doesn't sink in. You know, you're actually trying to tap into reasoning and future planning and decision making and and those sorts of things, and they're only looking at it through, at times, emotional eyes. You know, and that's certainly related to brain development, and, you know, and at those at times, it's sort of a matter of again, from a relationship standpoint, trying to be patient, you know, until hopefully at some time in the future, they can hear a little bit more with their frontal lobe.
Well, and the other factor of that, too, I have to realize that even Matt Rache, when I think about his age, even though he's a senior, he's a young senior. He's like 17,
yes.
You know, and he's going to graduate at 17. So I'm going, you know, and that's another factor. But, you know, at one point, you know, he's 6'5". What I told him, I said, keep messing around. I'm going to go get my baseball back because I can't tackle you.
Well, and you know, and the other thing about someone who is 6'5" and weighs that, people are going to treat him as more mature than he really is, and really what we're talking about here is that, you know, this is not deep pathology, this is immaturity, but an adolescent can get stuck there and can cause real problems. So it's a matter of how do you help them get past where they're stuck and move on, because the kinds of behaviors you see really come from immaturity. The trouble is that you know, a temper tantrum in a 2-year-old is much easier to handle than the kinds of behaviors that you see due to that immaturity in teens. And you know, and for this boy you're talking about, it's going to be hard for people to recognize that what's going on for him, even though he looks so adult,
exactly,
you know, still has to do with learning how to become more mature.
Well, we are going to take a break. The topic we are talking about is the upward spiral. So, a developmental approach to parenting your teen. If you'd like to follow along with us and learn a little bit more about our guest, Rick Johnson, you can go to www.summitprepschool.org. That's summitprepschool.org. You can open up another window. You can follow along with us and stick around. We'll be back in 1 minute. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And you're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest is Rick Johnson, and we are talking about an upward spiral, a developmental approach to parenting your teen.
Yeah, and Rick, you know, picking up where we left off as we're talking about the brain and development and the body. You're right. Sometimes I believe as adults, we will look at an individual, because I remember my oldest son, which was a pretty good sized kid. I would look at him sometimes and go, and have to remember he's not fully there yet. He has not fully developed. But so
But
relationships are very important. And in chapter 3, you focus on meaningful relationships. Then let's maybe go a little more in depth. Then why are relationships so important to promoting maturity in teens?
Well, you know, first, I mean, just to give a little background to the developmental perspective before, because I think you need to have that before you realize how important meaningful relationships are, that we actually think of the process of growing up as being linear, and in many respects it is. You know, I'm a grandparent now, so it's been fun to watch my, 3-year-old granddaughter. You know, she had to learn how to crawl before she could walk, you know, before she could run, and now you can't keep her down.
Right.
Well, psychologically, psychologically and socially, development is similar, and it can also be grouped into various stages. But in reality, it isn't that linear. You know, any major change in life causes us to have to rework these skills over again. And so, you know, it's actually a cycle, or as I like to see, a spiral, because hopefully each time you rework these, you're actually developing these skills at a more and more advanced level. But adolescence is a time of, like we've already mentioned, of tremendous changes. You got stuff going on in the brain. So this spiral has to be reworked. And the childhood skills that they had, you know, are just not advanced enough to handle all of the new stresses and everything that's going on in their life. Because adolescence is the first time they've really had to face these at a more adult level. And obviously what happens is very immature behavior, which again can be mistaken for a downward spiral, but it actually signifies that it's time to help them focus on a further upward spiral and reworking of these skills. And all these skills are developed within relationships. I mean, you know, that's the core of you know, how all of these skills are developed, and it really begins with the basic skill of self-soothing, which a lot of teens struggle with. A lot of teens cannot manage their emotions. And why this is a problem is that, you know, if you can't self-soothe, if you can't reassure yourself when under stress or when being frustrated, you can't think before you act.
Well, you know, Rick, you mentioned the word self-soothing a few times here. Can you maybe give a little more? What does that mean?
A great example in sort of you know, answering by what it isn't first is the example of road rage. You know, road rage is a great example for how times when many adults can lose the ability to self-soothe, and as a result, don't think logically and can do some pretty childish things. And sometimes some actually pretty dangerous things, you know, when you hear about what happens on the roadway. And so it takes the ability to self-soothe, you know, to actually calm yourself enough to actually think before you act. Now, think about walking around with that level of intensity of emotion sort of below the surface as a teen. When you're bumped wrong, boom. You know, there comes that strong emotion, and if you're not able to calm yourself enough, you act before you think. You know, you're not able to delay gratification long enough to think about the future and to access your frontal lobe, you know, as we mentioned earlier. So that's why self-soothing is so, you know, is so key to this, because it is the foundational skill upon which everything else builds.
Well, this comes back to, as you also mentioned in your book, that, you know, that becoming a teenager can be a stage in their life where they struggle. It's just that teenage, that's a struggling time of life, and I believe that we all have been there. We're all trying to, and, you know, having a middle school, I mean, you know, you see a bunch of emotions and hormones. You see just this rage of no logic.
You do.
And then, you know, I worked with a bunch of kids at the school that were, I would say, from a, you know, underrepresented community, so they're coming to school with issues. You know, so that's why I used to tell the teachers, it's really hard. I said, get to know your kids. Know them before you try to push academics on them. Because once you build that relationship, it's going to be so much easier to know them and understand. And the other thing that you shared earlier, I recognize teachers that were parents were more insightful and understanding than teachers who didn't have kids. Which was a
usually
very interesting dynamic.
That is the case, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and again, I mean, if you've been there yourself, you know, which is another reason why I'm a strong advocate for parent support groups, you know, parents, it's not something that you could really fully describe to someone else. You almost have to live it. You almost have to have had a teen or have a teen to truly get,
right,
you know, what their struggles like and how hard at times it can be as a parent.
Right. So going back to, I guess, going full circle now, meaningful relationships, what is that kind of the backdrop? Maybe you can articulate and speak a little more into that.
Sure. Well. First, related to self-soothing, the primary place, the primary way that's developed is within trusting relationships. So the trusting relationships provide a child and a teen a sense of having a secure base, which is why it's so important. And then meaningful relationships. What I mean by that is that relationships become meaningful enough that the teen is willing to try things, is willing to do things. You know, again, going back to that academic example, that relationship becomes important enough that they're willing to do their homework even when they don't see value in it.
Right.
And then that actually leads to the next step, because adolescence is about forming an initial sense of identity, and teens get their identity first through, as it were, copying others and actually trying things out that they see others do. It's why teen cliques are so popular, because they actually initially don't sort of separate their own sense of who they are from who they are as a member of the group. Which is why you can at times ask a teen, did you like a certain movie? And they have to ask their friends. They don't know until right. They check in with their friends.
Well, and real quick, not to cut you off, but here, the opposite side of that, what I see too, which is a healthy click, was when you see team sports.
And
you
absolutely.
Have, and you have great coaches. And as you mentioned earlier, that kind of that coaching, being able to relate, and I see that side of it as well. Is very healthy if you have a great coach.
That is very healthy, because that actually is a wonderful lead-in, because what you want to do in some ways is to sort of stack the deck with those positive relationships, so that they have more positive relationships, because the process of forming an identity first by copying others, that's normal development. That's not pathological. What you want to do is you want to give them enough opportunities so they want to try on healthy behaviors, and certainly a solid sports team, especially with good coaching, is a marvelous example. And there's lots of other examples where, if they can actually form those kinds of relationships, they start to define themselves in much more positive ways.
Right.
Yeah. And Rick, I think you bring up a great point when you talk about identity and the situation with their friends. And for many of our listeners, many of which are parents, what can parents do to help support their teen to form a more mature sense of identity?
It really does. A lot of this comes from relationships. You want to try to give them opportunities, because a lot of teens have a pretty limited scope in their life. They have their own small clique, as it were, and you want to give them opportunities to actually see that life is much broader and much richer than what they've experienced. You also want to begin to support them. The other important thing is that teens tend to have all or nothing thinking, and they actually tend to think that because they get their sense of identity first through those with which they identify with, these groups, they actually think that in order to have a sense of identity, you have to be just like those with which I identify, which it's why, teen, a lot of times it's not parents, it's why a teen can say, mom and dad, I'm my own person, but you see them with their friends and they're a carbon copy of their friends. But what you want to do is you want to give them, a much broader experience, and you also want them to begin to recognize that, you can be close to someone else. You can have a close relationship with someone else who's different from you. This is related to what's called social maturity and the development of social empathy, when you recognize I can be close to people who are different from me. And so if you give your child those opportunities as much as possible too, in school settings, in church settings, in synagogue settings, whatever, you want to give them those opportunities, because if they realize that I can be close to others who are different from me, it allows them to take the next step, is that I can be different from others and still be close to them. Well, and this is what helps build that sense sense of personal resiliency.
Right.
I don't have to copy my friends in order to be close to them. And that's a huge step for an adolescent that really allows them to form a much more independent sense of identity, where, you know, where they're not just driven by peer pressure.
Well, you know, I use the example of sports because it's something it helped shape me and develop me, along with some good parenting. But I look at the examples, and even when I look at examples outside of my own sphere of influence, you know, in sports and theater and these other avenues. But, you know, one thing that I noticed that, and I use myself as an example at this point, you know, when we're going through the stages of development, we always see someone we want to be like. You know, if you're in sports, I want to be like so-and-so. You see
them
at the highest level. And then as you start to develop, you find out, no, I just want to be me. I want to be the best whoever I was created to be. And but it's through that evolution. But if you have a healthy, positive role model, it definitely helps that process. And I think it brings us back to what you're saying, Rick. I know in chapter 6, you talked about becoming resilient. And you just said a few things about that earlier. And resiliency and in a teen, maybe you could just elaborate a little bit more.
Well, you know, what I mean by resiliency, you know, is it means that you're able to consistently tap into your more maturity skills, you know, some of the ones that I cover in the book. You know, are you able to actually remain strong, and, you know, and not cave into peer pressure, and not, have trouble self-soothing, and have sort of a road rage example, but maybe in school or with your friends. It really takes how do you stay strong, and again, you know, looking at it from a sports perspective, because it really is this how you become resilient is through practice.
Yes.
It's just like strength endurance. You know, the only way to become resilient is through a practice. In actuality, some of the best practice is practice in regressions. It's really, you know, practice and learning how to work through regression, you know, and this is something that can be quite frightening. And I think
parents. So when you say regression, did that mean a difficult time?
Yeah, you know, what I mean by that, you know, if you have someone who, you know, who's been doing better from a behavioral standpoint, who's slips up, you know, maybe someone who used to cheat on tests has been doing better and cheats again, or, you know, maybe someone who was smoking a lot of pot and is really, you know, has stopped that and they fall back into that. You know, I mean, what you're talking about is someone whose behavior has sort of slipped back into old unhealthy patterns.
Right.
Right.
And learning how to work through that is huge, because adolescents, again, this is part of that all or nothing thinking. They actually tend to say, well, gosh, you know, I've messed up. I must be right back to square one. Why even try? And they can easily sort of get very discouraged and stuck. And they don't know how to work through regressions. They don't have the experience to realize we all make mistakes in life, and it's what we do after we make those mistakes that help make us mature.
Now, Rick, we have an email question and comment coming through. This one reads, in the early 2000s, I read a psychology paper about how positive emotions trigger upward spirals. I remember vividly the visual imprint of these words and what they meant. So it is so wonderful to see these words in the title of your book. If I remember correctly, the piece talked about the benefits of increased attention and cognition, and that the spiritual that the spiral represented a spreading out and up, compounding the positive effects. Is your book based on these principles?
You know, I would certainly say yes. I mean, you know, I mean, in a, it's really a matter of keeping this process going. You know, and it isn't just through adolescence. these cycles repeat throughout life. And, you know, in fact, something that I talk to parents about is that when your child is struggling, it's going to kick off the same cycle in you. You know, and so, you know, this is an ongoing process where we're hopefully throughout our entire life and all aspects of our life, we are constantly working on becoming better people and better parents. You know, so yes, I mean, you know, certainly the positive emotions and you know, and really learning how to use these important skills and to make them stronger really is, you know, a lifelong process.
Hey, Rick, we have another question from a listener, which I think ties into what we're sharing here. It says, I am a teacher in a therapeutic boarding school with a classroom of young people with varying degrees of emotional and physical challenges. I remember a time when I could engage my students, when it was easier to inspire in them responsibility for each other, to family, to work, to ethics, to being present. My question for you, is there a bottom to the rabbit hole our society has created? And, you know, when we say a rabbit hole, a bottom, maybe, Alan, you want to, your thoughts about a rabbit hole?
No, I mean, what they say here in the thing is, you know, they're defining it as a generation of children so demanding to be entertained, buried in their cell phones, music, and other distractions.
And basically what the listener is saying, here's the last part of this. Maybe I need a new viewpoint, and would your book help me change my attitude? If so, I will buy it today. So you better sell it, Rick. Here's your opportunity. Sell it off the shelf.
Well, you know, obviously, if I didn't think this book would actually help change perspectives, but from having a more developmental perspective, you know, I certainly wouldn't have written it, and I certainly wouldn't have been doing the work that I've been doing, you know, over the last 15 years on just development, although I've been in the field now for well over 30. But you know, to actually address that with that individual, I think it is more difficult now to connect with kids, and it takes a lot more work. But they are still in there, and you know, it's a matter of understanding developmentally what's going on. And a big chunk of that is understanding how our current technological information explosion, you know, is having a negative effect on identity development, because it definitely is.
Well,
it's doing a number of things, and it's making it harder for kids to connect, and also harder for kids to even think for themselves.
Well, I think too, though. I mean, as we're evolving, parents have to evolve with time.
Yep.
And I look at our public education system, and even some of the private schools. We have not evolved where society or the technological invention has taken us. So as a parent, then I really believe it can be done. It is being done. It's more work, yes. But I think to me the analogy is like peeling back the layers on an onion to get to the heart of it. And that's unfortunately, that's what we have to approach it from, that, I think, that type of perspective. And to get to the heart. And sometimes, I just got to be honest, we've worked with a lot of parents. Sometimes they're lazy, and I'm just being honest. And I'm sorry, Alan. I know Alan's laughing at me now, but I'm just being honest. And they don't want to do the work. They want the results, but they don't want to go through the process.
Yes. Well, you know, a great example, it's hard to put limits on a teen cell phone, but it needs to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to put limits on their use of technology, but it needs to be done. You know, and just from a strict identity development standpoint, if you're always plugged in 24 hours a day, you know, if you're always texting friends, you never learn to think for yourself.
Yep.
And you never learn to wait for anything.
Right.
You know, and so you know, part of this as parents, you know, and having you know, my kids are now in their early 20s, but you know, certainly we dealt with this too. It's uncomfortable at times. you know, placing limits on your child, and that certainly and that definitely needs to be done around technology, and it means keeping up with that and understanding that, because it's not something that my parents had to do with me for example. You know, they didn't have to say you can only use so many minutes on your cell phone a day, because cell phones didn't exist. It does create more onus on parents, and it does mean that they have to keep up with the times.
You know, Rick, we've only got about 2 minutes, and I just want to thank you. This has been great. I think you've provided a lot of great information. But I want to touch on, I know that we have lots of listeners who also work within the same industry, and you mentioned in the appendix, that the developmental perspective that this book presents can also be applied to a treatment program. Share with us how, and I think that's something that both the professionals and the parents will appreciate.
And Rick, I hate to be the keeper of time. You got 1 minute.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll just make it very, very quickly. These same developmental perspectives and the same awareness can also form the basis of a program's treatment approach. This certainly forms the basis of what we do at Summit Preparatory School, for example, where we actually look at masteries of these skills, and we reinforce the importance of relationships based on these developmental principles as the basis of our treatment approach.
Well, Rick, again, thank you so much. And for anybody, if you have more questions for Rick, I believe you can reach him through their website. That's summitprepschool.org. And again, be with us next week on Answers for the Family. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.